When he mentioned my relationship with Sarah that night at the Springs, I didn't tell him what's between her and me. He still doesn't know how much I feel for Sarah, or what she feels for me. But he has probably guessed. The thought of facing her right now, facing all that anger and betrayal I saw in her eyes. I'll talk to her tonight. She's coming over with Orlando to watch a movie. Am I invited? He asks lightly. But there's a smidge of jealousy in his voice. Probably not a great idea, I admit. Watching Sarah disappear around a bend in the hallway, taking a little chunk of my heart with her. I thought I'd have more time to make up my mind. But I guess it's made for me. That lost feeling settles into my chest again. As soon as I step off the school bus at home, the fiddle's wild cry catches my ear, saying, "Follow, follow, find me." But I ignore it, hurrying home up the dirt road, like the alligators on my tail, my pulse pounding a steady rhythm in my head. I slam the front door and turn on the TV to make sure I drown out any notes that followed me inside. I don't trust that sound anymore. Mama leaves for work at 6, and I manage to get Honey in bed before 8, right before there's a knock at the door. Orlando's standing outside, gazing up into the sky, holding a Tupperware container. "Thunderstorm's coming," he says. "Where's Sarah?" I ask, even though I knew deep down she wasn't going to come. Orlando squeezes past me into the trailer. "She said she wasn't feeling well."
"And you actually bought that?"
"Why wouldn't I?"
He pushes up his glasses with his ring finger, the gesture as familiar to me as my own face in the mirror. Suddenly, I want to confess everything. She saw me with Cedar today.
"So?"
he says, sprawling on the couch, long, lanky limbs filling every inch of furniture. He holds out the container.
"Pastelitos, from my abuela."
"Thank you," I say, accepting the food. I open the lid and inhale the sweet smell of pastry. Ooh, guava and cheese. I love these. Give Mrs. Ortiz a kiss for me. Orlando reaches into the container and swipes a pastry, shoving it into his mouth with a groan. "Anyway," I say, "about Cedar, we were together. You know, together." Orlando's eyebrows rise toward his hairline in a perfect imitation of Sarah. He swallows the sticky pastry and wipes his mouth.
"You and Rodeo Boy, huh?"
I shrug and take a bite of a pastelito, closing my eyes at the heavenly taste. It's almost good enough to make me feel less miserable about Sarah. I should save one to take to Aunt Ina.
"That's good. It was never going to happen with you and Sarah anyway."
His words sting, but Orlando doesn't know everything. I push the remark away, clinging to my stubborn hope. "It could happen. We kissed, remember? It was a really good kiss," I add. Orlando snorts, and my desire to confess everything disappears. I throw a pillow at his head. "Let's just watch the movie. Maybe there's no use talking about it. Sarah's never going to open up to me like that again. Anyway, this isn't what I should be thinking about. I should be thinking about Jesse and finding a way to get him out without the fiddle's help, I guess. Since I nearly drowned going after it. Since Aunt Ina's probably right, and it wasn't Daddy drawing me. But if it wasn't him, I think I know who it might be. And the thought turns my worries about Sarah and Cedar to nothing. If it's him, if he's found a way out of my nightmares, I shiver and drop into the recliner, hugging my knees to my chest. We're halfway through a mediocre fantasy movie when the storm outside kicks up in earnest. The power flickers in and out, reminding me horribly of my dreams. Lightning flashes in between rumbles of thunder. I want to hide under a blanket, but instead I go to the window and peer out. A strike of lightning illuminates the trees, which are tossing in the wind. I can hear them rustling in the quiet spaces in the movie. When the actors stop speaking, the weapons stop clashing. Does the same tree ever get struck by lightning twice? I ask Orlando. But he's asleep, his mouth hanging open. If my favorite tree goes down tonight, if that tough old tree falls, what chance do I have to stand against everything trying to tear me down? Without thinking about it, I start to hum "The Old Oak Tree," as if my music can keep it safe from the storm. I tried to find the words to the old murder ballad a few years ago, since Daddy would never sing them. I had to search for hours, sifting through obscure ballads on useless web pages, until I found it on a university website. The ballad tells the story of a girl who sneaks out on a cold, dark, rainy night to meet a man and then goes missing. Her mother searches and searches for her, but she's vanished without a trace. Her mother dies of a broken heart. Weeks later, a squire and his dog find the girl's body, stabbed and buried under an old oak tree. When they confront her killer, he shoots himself and dies. He's buried right there where he killed her, and no priest will bless his grave. It's no wonder Daddy would never sing it for me. It was a struggle to put the lyrics to the melody, but I managed it, and I sing the words to myself now, though sometimes the thunder roars so loud it drowns out my voice. As I finish a verse, I trail off in thought. Beneath the old oak tree. After what happened at the lake, I should do like Aunt Ina said. Get on with my life. But as I stand at the window watching lightning scatter across the heavens and rain drive through the trees, the thought draws me as surely as Daddy's fiddle. What if? I whisper to myself. Aunt Ina said they put the fiddle back where it belonged, where it came from. But surely she didn't take it back to Ireland, back to Daddy's ancestors. She must have meant something else, somewhere else. She thinks the fiddle is death and darkness. She thinks it's rotten to its core. And yet I'm drawn to it just like I'm drawn to that old lightning-struck tree that made my daddy hum a murder ballad every time he drove by. I open the trailer's door and peer out into the storm. Rain dashes against my face. Wind hurls back my hair. The forest is full of shadows, and the trees toss and moan. I shouldn't go out in this storm, but an idea has taken hold of me. The rottenness of it running like static electricity through my limbs, popping in my muscles, making me unable to keep my seat. My good sense finally kicks in and I close the door, but then I open it again, listening for the fiddle. When I finally catch it between rumbles of thunder, I could swear it's playing "The Old Oak Tree." I make sure Honey and Orlando are still asleep, and then, like the girl from the song, I put on a raincoat and slip out the door into the dark, stormy night. The rain is beating down hard, the driveway already turning into a river. I run around to the little shed behind the trailer and search for a shovel. All I can find is a small hand spade Mama used once for planting flowers. But I take it and set off down the road, dodging puddles. The lightning illuminates my path every few minutes, but I know the way without it. I try to walk fast, concentrating on not falling into a rainwater-carved rut. But between the expectation thrumming through me and the roar of the storm, I can't help but run. My tennis shoes smack the road, sending splatters of mud halfway up my back. Soon my chest is heaving, but I can't stop. Finally, in a flash of lightning, the oak tree looms ahead of me. I run past it to find a gate and let myself into the field. It's more like a marsh now, the high grass sodden and treacherous. I trip twice, falling to my hands and knees. But finally, I fight my way to the lightning-struck tree that stands bare and white in the midst of the darkness like a beacon in a storm-tossed sea. Of course, it's always been a beacon. I haven't loved it all these years for nothing. I put my hand on the trunk and feel my way down to the roots, searching the ground for a soft place. Once I find a space free of roots, I start digging like the squire and his hounds from the ballad. Water fills the hole as fast as I can empty it, and after a few minutes, I abandon the spot and try another, and then another. But then lightning and thunder meet above my head in a roar of light and sound that makes me scream and fall to the muddy ground, shielding my head with my arms against the blue-white glare, waiting for tree limbs to fall on me. The thunder cracks again, and the backs of my tightly squeezed eyelids flash white. If I were brave enough to lift my head, I'd see clear across the field, the lightning is so bright. But the tree is still whole, and I'm not dead. So I pull myself from the mud and pick up my spade, trembling against the assault of wind and rain. Any bravery in me shattered. The only thing that keeps me from flying back to Mama's trailer is the thought of Jesse in a jail cell across town, listening to a storm he can't see. I keep digging, and finally, long after my arms begin to ache, long after my knees feel bruised, my spade strikes something hard. It could be a rock, but I know it isn't. Carefully, carefully, I dig around it with my hands, trying to ignore the lump forcing its way up my throat. This could be Daddy's fiddle, the answer to all my questions. With shaking arms, I unearth the object, which is encased in plastic, and hold it up to the light. It's the right size for a fiddle case, but it's too wrapped up to be sure. But it must be. Of course it is. I tuck it under my arm, my heart thundering in my chest, and start for home. The rain starts to let up as I near the trailer, but the lightning still forks across the sky. I let myself into the trailer quietly. The movie's over, the credits rolling down a dark screen. Orlando is still asleep, snoring quietly. I throw my raincoat over a chair and kick off my muddy shoes. But I'm too excited to bother changing out of my wet clothes. Instead, I take the parcel down the hallway to the bathroom and sit on the floor with it, waiting for the trembling in my limbs to stop. The plastic is thick and tough, but after a few tries, I rip it open and pull it off, mud and grass falling away with it. And there is Daddy's fiddle case, black and battered, covered in scratches, but whole. A sob catches in my throat, but I force it back down. With trembling fingers, I unlatch each of the rusting clasps, half afraid some dark creature's going to come leaping out at me. But when I open the lid, only the smell of home wafts out, must and dust, Daddy's aftershave, and the barest hint of cigarette smoke. The fiddle lies against the green velvet, its bow clipped into the top of the case, as quiet as if it's just been lying there forgotten all this time. As if its music hasn't been chasing me through forests and lakes, drawing me and drowning me, threatening all I am. I pull it out of the case, like it's a newborn baby I might drop, fragile and dangerous at once. I lay the fiddle in my lap and stare down at it. Daddy's fiddle. Not lost, not dark. The wood still gleams, and the strings aren't rusted. It looks exactly like it did the last time Daddy put it away. After all this time, it's whole and bright and beautiful. Do the strings remember the last notes he played? Is the music still trapped inside the wood? After so long underground, the fiddle's strings should be loose and out of tune. But when I touch the A string with one finger, it gives out a single soft note. A shiver runs up my arm. Someone says my name, startling me. It must have been Orlando. I get up and listen at the bathroom door to see if he'll call again.
Shady Grove,
the voice says, light as a breeze drifting through a window.
My little love.
It's a man's voice, but not Orlando's. It's a voice as familiar to me as the fiddle in my hands. A voice with the timbre of a Johnny Cash album, dipped in honey. Daddy? I whisper, disbelief and longing at war in my chest. His words pour out from a source I can't see, can't find.
Shady Grove, don't you forget what I taught you. Ghosts aren't all gentle and innocent. Some of them have got murder and vengeance on their minds. And some are so bitter, they'll try to pull you back down to hell with them. Don't you go playing that fiddle until you're ready, baby. And I can tell you right now, you're not ready.
Daddy. There's a long pause filled with the rustle of a pine-scented breeze.
Be careful, Shady Grove. I miss you. And I love you.
Before I can speak, the voice is gone. The room is still. A swoop of grief goes through me. Then Honey lets out one long, terrified shriek from our room on the other side of the wall. I drop the fiddle in its case and scramble out of the bathroom. When I flip on the lights in our room, she's sitting up in bed, her eyes open and staring, her mouth open in a never-ending scream. I rush to her and take her in my arms, sitting down on the bed. Shh, honey, girl, shh, I'm here, I say. But she goes on screaming. Orlando comes thundering down the hallway and peers in.
What's wrong?
He yells, eyes darting around the room, looking for an intruder. I don't know. I turn Honey so she's facing me, and she keeps screaming right into my face, her eyes open and staring.
Oh my God, Orlando yells. Get out now, get out!
I leap to my feet and race for the door with Honey in my arms. Orlando slams it behind us. The moment the door shuts, Honey stops screaming. What was it?
Wasps, Orlando says. A bunch of them. There must be a wasp nest in the room somewhere.
Honey's quiet now, but shaking in my arms. Her eyes still staring straight ahead. There's a growing red welt on one of her cheeks.
I want Jesse, she whimpers.
Orlando touches her face with gentle fingers.
Looks like one of them got her.
Is she allergic?
I don't think so.
Check her for more stings.
He orders, leading us to the living room. The rest of Honey's body is unmarked. Her eyes have cleared. You okay, honey girl? She nods, but her bottom lip trembles.
Bad dream. I want Jesse.
She says again, wringing my heart. Jesse's on a trip, remember? That's all we could think to tell Honey, that Jesse was traveling. But I'm here. You had a bad dream? I ask, my voice gentle. Honey's always having vivid dreams that she struggles to put into words. Her vocabulary hasn't caught up with her imagination. She nods.
Bugs? Lots of bugs with wings?
She whimpers. Orlando's brow scrunches together.
And dark. It was dark,
she says, her voice tinged with hysteria. I hold her close to my chest until she seems calm, and then I sit next to her on the couch. She slumps against me with her thumb in her mouth, exhausted. Now that Honey's calm, Orlando's worried expression is turning to curiosity. I'm going to go take a look, he says, slipping down the hall. Orlando, be careful, I call. I hear the bedroom door creak open, and then silence. Huh, Orlando finally says. What? They're all dead. I jump off the couch and join him in the room. There are dozens of dead wasps scattered over the carpet. Orlando lifts one carefully into his palm and studies it.
It's an eastern yellow jacket, he says. I don't understand what happened. Wasps don't just fall dead out of the air.
Is there a nest in here? Orlando runs his hands along the walls and gazes up at the ceiling.
No, not that I can see. It could be inside the wall, I guess. You guys should get it checked before you sleep in here again.
He puts his ear to each wall and listens for a long time.
The Natural History Museum in Gainesville had an exhibit on Florida wasps. Yellow jackets are really, really aggressive. And their nests can be huge.
My skin tingles like the wasps are buzzing over my arms. I felt the same thing a few weeks ago, but couldn't place the sensation. But now I know what my skin remembers.
Do you mind if I take these home?
Orlando asks, going back to the living room with dead wasps cupped in his palms.
I want to study them a bit more.
Fine, I say. Sarah would make a sarcastic comment now, but my mind's not on Orlando. I'm thinking of something that happened in the weeks before Daddy died. I kept dreaming about wasps, and finally one night the wasps came out of my dream and chased me from my bed. I ran downstairs to get Daddy, who was playing his fiddle, and when he went upstairs, all the wasps were dead. Later, I decided the wasps had already been in my room, and that's why I dreamed about them. Like when you need to pee at night and dream you can't find a bathroom. I figured I'd still been dreaming when I ran downstairs. But now I know. It must have been the fiddle. The fiddle must have brought the wasps, and the music gave them life. It doesn't make sense. But they came when Daddy played, and then when I plucked a single note, they appeared for Honey. I shudder. This means Jesse wasn't overreacting, and neither was Aunt Ina. I can't believe I didn't realize it before. What else can the fiddle bring? I gaze at my little sister's bed. I did this with one flick of the fiddle's strings. I rush to the bathroom and lock the fiddle in its case. I slide it under my bed, slam my bedroom door, and hurry to the living room to take my sister up in my arms. I hold her close and feel our hearts beating together. They won't hurt you again, I promise. But Aunt Ina's words ring in my ears. Sometimes the people who love us most do us hurt.
Wait, why are you all muddy and wet?
Orlando asks, once Honey wriggles her way out of my arms. He cocks his head at me, taking in my bedraggled appearance and the fear in my eyes.
What's going on?
How do you tell your best friend you just dug up your dead father's fiddle in a thunderstorm? You don't. Especially if your best friend is a science-loving agnostic. Orlando doesn't like to talk about the supernatural. His grandma is very superstitious, but he has tried hard to distance himself from anything science can't explain. I took out the trash and fell in a puddle, I say. I'll go change. I leave the room before he can ask more questions. But I feel his eyes follow me down the hallway. There's another pair of eyes on me, keener than Orlando's, seeing deeper than he ever will. But I don't know whose they are. I hope they're Daddy's, but I don't think so. Not anymore. Because I know that was Daddy's voice in the bathroom, and he came to warn me. I might not listen to Jesse or Aunt Ina, but I have to listen to him. He said there were spirits who would drag me down to hell. He said I wasn't ready to face them. The same spirit who led me to a rattlesnake, who tried to drown me in the lake, who sent wasps to sting my baby sister. He's the one who's watching. He's the one who's been playing Daddy's fiddle. Who's been playing me. If I let him, he'll take all I have. 15. I don't pull the fiddle out again all weekend. I want to. My fingers itch for the strings. But I leave it where it is, no matter how desperately it calls to me. No matter how badly I want to prove Jesse's innocence. I ignore Aunt Ina's phone calls, and on Saturday morning, I drop her groceries on the front porch so I won't have to see her. I don't tell anyone about the fiddle or the wasps. I try not to think about Jim's ghost or Jesse in his cell. Daddy said I wasn't ready. And he was right. But by Sunday evening, I can't stand it anymore. I can't keep anything fixed in my mind except that velvet-lined case underneath my bed. My desire to play the fiddle has turned from want to need. I know it's dangerous, and I know I should put it back in the ground it came from. But all I want is to hear it sing. The craving thrums through me, stronger than my desire to kiss Sarah. Stronger than the urge to wrap my body around cedars. I pace my tiny bedroom, back and forth, my mind wavering with my steps. What did my daddy mean when he said I'm not ready? That I'm not strong enough? That I'm too weak to rule such a powerful instrument? Or that I'm not ready for what will come when I play? All the answers I need lie just underneath the fiddle strings, waiting to be released. But more than that, some part of me that has been sleeping all these years is awake now, and it's greedy for the fiddle's music. But if it's a dark spirit doing all this, if it's something Daddy doesn't want for me after all, I have to resist, don't I? I can't put others in danger to satisfy my own cravings, my own needs. I have to think of Honey. I leave my room in a rush before I do something stupid, before I give in to the dark spirit trying to drag me down with him. I'm halfway down the hallway when someone knocks on the front door. I didn't hear anyone pull up outside, and it's just Honey and me at home. Mama doesn't like me to answer the door to strangers when she's at work, but when I glance out the hallway window, Frank's truck is parked out front. A crash of conflicting emotions hits me. Anger, annoyance, worry. But underneath all that, there's the old familiarity of Frank. Solid, dependable, everyday Frank. So I take a breath and pull open the front door. I have to crane my neck to meet his eyes, he's so tall. Frank gives me a grim smile, and I step back to let him in. Honey jumps up from her coloring book with a squeal.
Uncle Frank!
She launches herself into his legs, and he bends down and lifts her, drawing her close to his chest. Honey wraps her arms around Frank's neck and squeezes tight.
Hey, sweetheart.
Frank croons into her hair. The knot of worry in my belly loosens.
Your mama here?
Frank asks me. She's at work. She's had to pick up extra shifts since. I don't know how to finish the sentence without bringing up Jim. Frank nods and squeezes his eyes shut. He puts Honey down and goes to sit at the kitchen table. Honey follows him and crawls into his lap. She must be missing Jim more than I realized.
I came by to apologize,
Frank says, rubbing a hand over his face. His wedding band flashes in the light. He looks down at it and sighs.
I shouldn't have said what I did at the funeral. I was angry and looking for people to blame.
He meets my eyes.
I'm sorry. Will you tell your mama that for me?
I will, I say, taking the chair adjacent to him.
Are y'all doing all right?
Frank asks. I nod. Honey is confused and sad sometimes, and it's been hard on Mama, but we're getting by.
If you all need anything at all, you know you can call me, right?
Frank says. He gives Honey a hug, and she burrows into him. All right, I say, softening toward him. Thank you. Maybe Frank really does regret what he said to Mama. Maybe he's even sorry for how quick he was to blame Jesse for Jim's death.
I'd hate to think the way I acted at Jim's funeral made y'all think I don't care about you,
Frank says carefully. Now I have to ask, does that mean you don't think Jesse? Frank shakes his head.
No, I still do. I know it was him. But your mama didn't deserve how I acted at the funeral. It's not her fault.
Why are you so sure it was him? I ask, my temper flaring. But Frank doesn't notice my anger. He runs his fingers absently over Honey's hair.
Jim and Jesse were a time bomb, just waiting to go off. I saw it every day at work, Shady.
I clench my jaw. I just don't believe my brother could do something like that.
I used to feel that way about Jim, too.
Frank says, his voice quiet.
I used to think better of him. Before he started drinking and carousing. But after he showed his true colors one too many times, I had to accept who he was.
Jim wasn't that bad, I say. I don't know why I suddenly feel the need to defend him. Frank smiles sadly.
There's a lot you don't know, Shady. You're too young and sweet to know half of what's in men's hearts.
I might not have known Jim as well as you did, but I know Jesse. He's innocent. And that's going to come to light one way or another. Frank sighs.
You're a good sister. But soon you're going to find out.
My stomach tightens. What? Did something new happen? What do you know? I lean forward in my chair, squeezing my hands so hard it hurts.
You shouldn't have to hear about this,
Frank says. Just tell me. Frank picks Honey off his lap.
Go draw me one of those pretty pictures, baby,
he tells her. Once Honey's out of earshot, Frank leans toward me. The anger in his eyes is still there, sharp and true. But there's something more now, too. Regret and heartache.
There was a man from the power company working on the electrical lines. He had pulled up near the construction site just as Jesse was running out the front of the house where they found Jim. He came forward to the police this morning.
So, I say, even though the knot in my stomach is so tight I can hardly breathe.
So he saw that Jesse had blood on his hands. The man thought it was just paint, but looking back, he realized it was blood.
I push my chair back and spring to my feet. No. No, he was wrong. Or he's lying. Jesse would never. A sob crawls up my throat.
I'm sorry, sweetheart.
Frank stands and puts a hand on my shoulder, but I shake it off. Please go, I say, looking toward the front door. I've got to get dinner ready for Honey. It's her bedtime soon. Frank sighs and walks past me.
I really tried to do right by Jim, you know. He made it almost impossible, but I really tried. Some people are just determined to tie their own noose.
Sure, I say. See you later. I close the door behind him. Maybe I should have been kinder, but all I can think about is Jesse with blood on his hands. Jesse with another damning piece of evidence hanging over his head. And it's yet another person saying I'm wrong to believe Jesse. Yet another voice trying to break down my confidence in my brother. The moment Mama gets home and goes to her room to change, I snatch the fiddle from underneath the bed, tuck it under my arm, and march into the woods, far, far away from the trailer. That will keep Honey safe. Or at least I need to believe that it will. Because I've got to play this fiddle. Not for my own sake, or any evil spirits. For Jesse. For my brother. Daddy didn't say I could never play the fiddle. He said I shouldn't play it until I'm ready. But what if Jesse doesn't have that long? This is the only way I have to help him. I open the clasps and lift the lid, sucking in my breath when the wood gleams in the fading light. Gingerly, gingerly, I lift it from the case and bring it up to my chest. With a racing heart and trembling fingers, I tune the instrument, thinking how Daddy's were the last hands to turn these picks, his fingers the last to hold this bow. And then the instrument is ready and waiting for me to play. It's not too late. I could still put it back in the case and close the clasps. But instead, I take a deep breath
and draw the bow across the strings. The notes pour out like a dark brown river, carrying a drowned girl away. My breath catches in my chest. I'm playing the Trois Sisters, exactly the way Daddy played it, as if I carry every ounce of the drowned sister's fear and shock, every ounce of the killer's shame. It's beautiful and haunting, exactly how it's meant to be. I'm tensed for wasps, or worse, but I make it through the whole song. The music fades into the forest, and nothing happens. The cicadas pick up where my fiddle left off. The sun goes down, and no ghosts appear. Daddy didn't raise a spirit every time he played either. There must be some secret to it. A secret I'll learn soon. A secret I have to learn. My cell phone dings in my pocket, and it's a text from Sarah. Orlando must have been working his peacemaking magic on her. Band practice soon? You can invite Cedar and Rose. I can't imagine what it cost her to send this text, to let me have the band I want when it's bound to be painful for her. Her history with Rose is bad enough, but now with me and Cedar, this is the most selfless thing Sarah's ever done for me. Maybe for most people it wouldn't be a big deal, but it's a huge thing for Sarah, giving ground like this. I blink away the tears that try to start in my eyes. I can't let myself go weak now, not when there's this much at stake. All that matters is learning to play Daddy's fiddle, to play it for what it's made for, to use it to raise Jim's ghost. No matter how dangerous, no matter what it costs. Maybe with my band's help, I can learn to make the fiddle do my bidding. Maybe if I love it enough, play it enough, I can burn the darkness right out of it. And then I'll set Jesse free. I get to Sarah's early, and Orlando's Honda is already in the driveway. Sarah's black lab trouble jumps all over me when I let myself in. "You are a terrible guard dog," I tell her. She keeps licking my hands. "Shady?" Sarah calls from the kitchen, and I find her pouring bags of chips and pretzels into serving bowls like a hostess, which makes me laugh. Orlando's sitting on a stool beside her, shoveling the food into his mouth as fast as she can get it into the bowls. "What?" Sarah knits her eyebrows. "Nothing," I say, eyeing her. We still haven't talked about the day she saw Cedar and me together. I think she's choosing to pretend it never happened, just like our own case. But I'm not being particularly forthcoming either. I know I shouldn't be bringing everyone here without telling them what my fiddle is, what it does. But if I tell them, they might not want to help me. And Sarah might reject me once and for all. Might decide that my family and I are too much, too strange, too complicated to fit into her world. Besides, this isn't a haunted house or a forest filled with ghosts. It's an ordinary house in suburbia, and I've never felt a spirit here. It's a safe place, far from all the ghosts I know. Sure, some ghosts can travel, but I need to believe that the dark spirit won't follow me here. That there's somewhere I'm safe from him. A place I can learn to use Daddy's fiddle to master it before I go looking for ghosts to raise. The thought of Jesse and that witness who said there was blood on Jesse's hands, that's enough to push my guilt and misgivings away. I have to use the fiddle, no matter the risks. The doorbell sounds, pulling me from my thoughts. and I go answer it. Cedar's standing at the door with Kenneth and Rose.
This is my sister Rose,
Cedar says unnecessarily. Hey, I'm Shady. Sarah's in the kitchen. Then Rose does that thing girls do where they flit their eyes from your shoes to your hair, sizing you up, or judging your outfit or whatever. Her mouth tightens, so I guess she's not impressed, but she says, "Nice to meet you." Kenneth winks at me as he comes inside. I didn't know he was coming, but after our jam at the Springs, I'm not surprised Cedar invited him. When I lead them into the kitchen, Orlando's eyes catch on Rose and stay there a minute. Then he seems to realize he's staring, and he waves both hands awkwardly. Hey, he says shyly. I'm Orlando Ortiz. Sarah barely glances up from the bowls of food. Introductions go around, everyone nervous and jittery, feeling each other out. Sarah sticks close to Orlando and gets a weird look on her face every time Rose glances her way. An awful, achy jealousy fills me. And I know it's wrong, but I'm tempted to flaunt my new relationship with Cedar just to get a rise out of Sarah. But then Rose settles her eyes on me again, appraising. So you're the one whose brother killed Kenneth's dad? Kenneth's mouth drops open, and Cedar swears under his breath.
I'm sorry, Shady,
Cedar says. That's okay, I say, even though everyone is standing around wide-eyed and gaping. My brother was arrested for Jim's murder, but he didn't do it. That's why I'm here. That's what this is all for, to get to the truth. I have to hold on to this goal. Rose cocks her head, disbelieving. Even Kenneth doesn't think so, I say. He looks at me uncertainly, but doesn't say anything. Jim's death is probably the only thing Kenneth has never been able to make into a joke. He's barely mentioned Jim since that day at the Springs. Leave her alone, Rose, Sarah says. And Rose flashes her a glare, which makes Orlando step closer to Sarah. A flash of triumph fills my chest, followed by doubt. Has Sarah confided in Orlando? Does he know what she feels for Rose? What she feels for me? God, this petty jealousy is stupid, considering everything else that's on the line. This is the band I've wanted for so long. This band could help me become the musician I've always wanted to be. And maybe if I'm finally good enough, the ghosts will follow my playing. If I'm good enough, I can control the fiddle's power. I can bring Jim back long enough to save Jesse. Not tonight, but soon. Forget it. Let's just play. I've got to pull us all together or this band will fall apart before we've even played a note. I reach for Daddy's fiddle case, ignoring the creep of fear that makes my fingertips tingle. Where should we set up? Sarah points wordlessly to the living room. Everyone sits down and starts pulling out instruments, eyeing each other warily.
Nice guitar,
Cedar says to Orlando.
You've been playing long?
Like 7 or 8 years. I played Cuban country with my abuelo and tios in Miami. Orlando looks down shyly at his Gibson. You can tell he loves it by the way he holds it, how his fingers caress the wood. His love for his family is wound in its strings, just like my fear and hopes are strung through my daddy's fiddle. While everyone tunes their instruments, I survey our new band. There's my fiddle, Sarah's and Rose's banjos, Orlando's and Kenneth's guitars, and Cedar's mandolin. Not bad.
It would be good to have an upright base,
Cedar says.
But this will do for now. Should we start with something simple?
He tries to look innocent, but everyone knows what he means. He doesn't think we're up to snuff. Bluegrass musicians usually start learning their instruments before they can walk, and it makes them think of anyone else as a beginner. Typical Southern macho shit. But Orlando's mouth curves into an amused smile, and Kenneth tells Cedar where he can shove that mandolin of his. Everyone laughs and the tension breaks. We should play some Gillian Welch, Sarah says. Cedar whips his head around.
That's not even bluegrass. It's folk.
So? Sarah bristles. Rose and I play bluegrass. Sarah scoffs. This is what's wrong with bluegrass players. You're too traditional. That's why bluegrass is going to die out one of these days.
I don't see any point in starting a bluegrass band if we're not even going to play bluegrass,
Cedar says, shaking his head. They both look at me, expecting me to resolve the argument. I open my mouth and close it again. Well, what if... Rose interrupts.
Cedar, you're such a fucking purist. Stop acting like you're Bill Monroe.
Kenneth supports her with a dramatic, mm-hmm, like a Southern grandma.
I'm a bluegrass player, Cedar says stubbornly. I didn't come here to play wagon wheel or whatever other nonsense people are always trying to bring into bluegrass.
Sarah shoots me an angry look, probably thinking this is a dig at her on my behalf. Orlando clears his throat nervously.
Look, I'm not trying to be an asshole,
Cedar says.
But I play bluegrass mandolin. I thought that's why you invited me. If you want to play something else, you'll need to find yourself another mandolin player.
How about we focus on bluegrass tonight? See how we sound together? I say, giving Sarah a pleading look. We can argue about this more later. Fine, Sarah says, glaring at Cedar. He nods, ignoring her. How about I'll fly away? I suggest, relieved. It's an easy song everyone knows. I turn to Sarah. You want to get us going? This was my idea, but I've never played with so many people. I'm hesitant to take the lead, especially with Daddy's fiddle in my hands. All right, she says. Key of G?
Throw us some taters,
Cedar says. Sarah rolls her eyes at the bluegrass jargon, but picks out the first four notes. And then we're playing. It's jumbled sounding at first, everyone trying to learn each other's rhythms. But soon it smooths out. Orlando's providing a good rhythm on guitar and singing baritone, a perfect complement to Cedar's higher tenor voice. Rose adds her voice, a rich, deep alto. Her banjo's quiet since it's open back, but it's a nice contrast with Sarah's noisier one. Even Kenneth holds his own. My fiddle blends perfectly with the other instruments, lending the song a longing quality I've never managed before. Sarah and Orlando keep darting me surprised looks. I must sound different even to them. This is my first taste of belonging to a real band, and already I love it. I think it must be impossible to feel lonely while playing music with other people. The way your minds and hearts and bodies all sync up, bound by the music you're building together. It feels like I'm soaking up everyone else's talent and passion and pouring it into my fiddle. This is everything I'd hoped it would be. My fear of this fiddle and all it can bring fades away into the back of my mind. When we finish the song, I turn to Cedar, carried by the music into a more lighthearted mood. Well, are we good enough for a busy guy like you to stick around for? Everyone know their way around an instrument to your satisfaction? Cedar ducks his head in a show of bashfulness. But his eyes tell me he's not the least bit cowed.
Y'all do,
he says, smiling. And Orlando barely contains a laugh, probably at Cedar's unapologetic drawl. But Sarah only glares at Cedar, while Rose eyes her uncertainly. This is a strange and tangled sort of band we're forming, but it's working. Cedar leads us into Bury Me Beneath the Willow. We play it a few times until everyone's got the hang of it, and then move on to I Am Weary. Cedar and Rose do most of the singing, but Orlando sings too. And I sing during parts where I'm chopping the rhythm instead of playing. Sarah clearly has no intention of ever singing a word in this band, but she looks like she's having a good time, despite all her former protests about boring traditional music. When we finish playing through I Am Weary for the third time, Kenneth says, "Are there any bluegrass songs that aren't about dying?" And everyone laughs. He'd think all these songs about death would remind him of his dad. But if they are, he's not showing it. Maybe he's just determined to be cheerful. "I know one," Cedar says. And he launches into Shady Grove with a flirty smile. Sarah's eyes go wide, and she looks at me worriedly. But I shrug one shoulder and start playing. It was bound to happen. And after the shock of hearing it the first time, I'm ready to start enjoying the song that gave me my name again. And I'm ready to play it with Daddy's fiddle. When he sings the line, "A kiss from Little Shady Grove is sweet as brandy wine," Cedar quirks his eyebrows at me, and something inside me loosens. Like my grief for Daddy's been caked against my ribs, but this song's breaking it apart. I am never going to be able to hear or play this song without hearing Daddy's voice in it. Every lyric is written on my heart in his handwriting. Every note carries a memory of him. As we play, I close my eyes and let the memories wash over me. Daddy's singing me awake with this song, his hands brushing my hair. Daddy climbing into his truck, waving at me from the window. Daddy's coffin being lowered into the ground, his voice buried by 6 feet of earth. I let my fiddle fly, losing myself in its frantic wails. As I pick up speed, everyone else does too, as if they're drawn into my energy. We get faster and faster, till we're playing quicker than I've ever heard anyone play this song. My fingers should be cramping up, but I feel almost detached from my body, lost in the music. I close my eyes, and all I can hear is music. Until that hearing becomes feeling, and the music is deep inside me, pulsing like waves. If I open my eyes, I'm convinced I'll look down to see a yawning ocean. Cedar has stopped singing because my fiddle's too loud to sing over. So it's just the instruments now, the frantic pinging of the mandolin, the howling of my fiddle, two banjos twanging for all they're worth, and Kenneth's desperate attempt to keep up. The only instrument I don't hear is Orlando's guitar. When I open my eyes, he's staring wide-eyed and shocked at something behind me. I swivel my whole body to look so I can keep playing, and as I do, I see a woman standing at the door, her dark hair tousled, her eyes long-lashed and brown like Sarah's. I recognize her from the framed picture Sarah keeps by her bed. It's her mother. Her dead mother. A flash of feeling goes through me. Fear and regret and joy and hope all in one. Sarah, I manage to croak, but I don't stop playing. She looks up at me, not noticing her mom. Behind me, I say, stepping out of her line of sight. When Sarah sees her mother, her mouth falls open and she drops her banjo. The carpet muffles its thud, but Cedar and Rose startle and stop playing. I don't stop moving my bow, partly because I don't want to, and partly because I can't. I'm locked in this song. Mom? Sarah says, rising slowly off the couch. She pulls each of the picks from her fingers, leaving a trail of them on the carpet. She crosses the room, stopping a few feet from her mother. The two of them stare at each other, their faces so full of emotion, it's hard to look right at them. Finally, Sarah reaches out to touch her mother's cheek. And I can imagine what she feels when her skin meets her mother's. That tingly cold I felt the night the old man's ghost came to my bedroom. "But you're dead," she says, though my fiddle nearly drowns out her voice. Cedar puts a hand on my shoulder, and I know he means for me to stop playing, but if I do, Sarah might not get to hear her mother's response. I change songs, playing as softly as I can. Cedar looks at me questioningly, but when I shake my head, he leaves it be. "I'm so sorry I left you," the ghost says, her eyes luminous and haunted. "Why'd you go?" Sarah asks, hugging herself. And there's this desperate note in her voice, like it's a question she's asked 100 times before. Her mother searches her eyes, like she's deciding whether she's brave enough to tell the truth, or whether Sarah's strong enough to hear it. "I was so sad," she says. "So sad. Everything was too hard. Taking care of you was hard. Getting out of bed was hard." Sarah backs away a few steps, and her mother moves forward, filling the space. Her hands go to Sarah's cheeks, and to my surprise, Sarah doesn't flinch. "I loved you so much," the woman says. "You were the most perfect little girl, and I didn't deserve you, not one single inch of you. You needed better than I could give you. I thought I was doing the right thing, leaving you. I missed you so much," Sarah says. "I still do. Can you forgive me?" Sarah nods, her eyes filling with tears. The ghost pulls her into a hug so fierce I can almost feel it. Then the woman looks over Sarah's shoulder and locks her eyes on me, her face imploring. She wants me to let her go. Something snaps in me, like a rubber band stretched too tight. I stop playing, and the moment I take my bow from the strings, I drop to the floor and into darkness. There are things in the darkness. Dark, angry, hungry things. I can't see them, but they flit around me, all wings and want. I don't know what they are, but I bet Miss Patty would call them devils. I try to move, but I'm paralyzed, numb. The wind from the devil's wings brushes my face. I gaze up into inky blackness, terror rising in me like a flooded river. This isn't a dream. I know without a doubt I'm inside the Shadow Man, chained up in the festering blackness of his heart. A scream rips from my throat, a pulse of energy hurtling into the darkness. And when my scream hits it, the darkness breaks, shattering like a mirror, letting the light in. The devils cry and wail, bursting into puffs of ash. But I don't stop screaming until I feel the carpet of Sarah's living room underneath me, until the electric light turns my closed eyelids red. And then there are hands on me, rough hands on my arms and my shoulders, shaking me.
Shady,
Cedar says, over and over. Shady,
Shady, Shady.
I open my eyes and gaze up into his face. His mouth is open and he's breathing heavy, his nostrils flaring. He's so afraid.
Shady,
he says again. But this time it's a statement and not a plea.
Shady.
When I sit up, the room spins, and I'm afraid I'm going to drop back into the darkness. But Cedar holds on to my shoulders, and then my head, like he's trying to make the room go still for me.
You all right?
He asks, his voice shaky.
Yeah. What happened?
I meet his eyes again, blink and then look away, passing a hand over my face. I guess I passed out.
Cut the crap, Shady, Rose says from the couch.
She doesn't look scared or worried like Cedar. She looks mad. She looks like a tiny pirate who wants to rip out my heart and feed it to the sea.
What?
I ask, my voice hoarse, not quite meeting her eyes. Rose gestures angrily at Sarah, who's kneeling on the ground a few feet away, weeping into her hands. Orlando is kneeling beside Sarah, rubbing her back. I remember her mother's ghost, and the thought chases away the shadow man from my mind. I've never seen Sarah cry before. I push off the ground and go to her.
Sarah, are you okay?
She looks up at me, tears running down her cheeks, and opens her mouth to speak. But only a sob comes out. And then she throws herself into my arms, nearly knocking me over. She wraps her arms around my neck, pulling me into her. She lays her head on my shoulder and cries, just like honey has done 1,000 times. I hold her close, running my hand over her hair. My thumb brushes her ear and the cloud-shaped birthmark behind it. All I've longed for is to be this close to Sarah, to hold her in my arms. But this isn't how I wanted it to happen. I hate to be the reason she needs comforting.
I'm so sorry, I say. So sorry.
I rock her gently as she weeps into my hair. Guilt and shame flooding me. I didn't mean to. Finally, Sarah pulls back and looks at me, her face a mess of tears and anguish. Orlando hands her a tissue, and she wipes her face.
Didn't mean to what?
She asks, hiccuping down her sobs.
You didn't do anything.
It was my... I pause, not sure I'm ready to confess everything. Was it awful to see her like that? I ask instead. And Sarah's eyes fill with fresh tears.
Not completely,
she whispers.
It was a lot to process. I'm not sure what I feel.
Jesus Christ! Tell us what the fuck is going on here right now, Rose says.
Sarah glances between us, and understanding fills her eyes. She stares at me, shocked.
You
brought that ghost here. Rose's voice is so matter-of-fact, I wonder if her little banjo has a history like my fiddles.
Yeah, I did.
I look back at Sarah. I'm so sorry. Sarah leans away from me.
Hal.
I get up and pick my fiddle off the floor and show it to them. It was my daddy's. We thought it was lost or destroyed when he died. But, well, I found it and it brings the spirits of the dead to the person who plays it. I expect the room to burst into angry noise, but everyone just stares at me.
That's ridiculous, Orlando says.
He's holding Sarah again, his hands tied around her arms. Rose turns on him.
Didn't you see the fucking ghost?
Orlando flinches back from her, mumbling about carbon monoxide poisoning. He doesn't want to accept what happened. Doesn't want to believe that all the stories his grandmother told him about wayward spirits and family curses might be true.
Where did the fiddle come from?
Cedar asks, his voice surprisingly calm now.
I mean, why did your dad have it?
It's been in the family a long time. It doesn't look like much, but it's old. Really, really old. Someone buried it, but then I found it.
The other night, you came back all muddy,
Orlando says. That's when you... I nod, but I don't meet his eyes.
Can I look at it?
Cedar asks, and I hold the fiddle out to him. Though the moment his fingers touch it, I feel a hunger to have it back. He takes it in his hands and studies it, turning it over. I cross my arms to keep from snatching it away. Cedar doesn't handle the fiddle like it's a ghostly object that was recently dug out of the ground. He holds it like any other instrument. A collection of wood and strings. And it hurts me to watch him turn it over so roughly. Kenneth peers over Cedar's shoulder to see the fiddle, too. His expression a mingling of curiosity and fear. But Rose is looking at Sarah. Strangely, almost longingly. Like she wishes she were in Orlando's place. Holding Sarah close. Finally, after a long silence, Sarah speaks.
Why would you want to raise my mother's ghost?
I push my hair out of my face and sink into the recliner, as far from Rose as I can get. She's a tiny girl, but she's radiating anger. I thought she was a jerk, but maybe she's just protective. The way Jesse is of me.
I didn't mean to. I say.
She's not the one I...
How does it work?
Cedar asks. Like I said, the fiddle attracts ghosts, and it can let them take solid forms, at least long enough for them to speak, to say their piece, whatever.
Why would you want to do that?
Orlando asks, horrified. If Orlando's brother was wrongly jailed, I know his response would never be something like this. He'd find a safe, logical solution that didn't involve summoning ghosts. But there isn't one. This fiddle is all I've got. I'm not sure any of them are capable of understanding my reasons, but I have to try to make them see. Words don't seem like enough, but